All right, welcome along to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour, keeping you up to date with all of the latest sporting manners from around the Rebel County as well as further afield. A stacked show today, so we're going to get straight into things and head to Sarah McKenzie Foley with the halftime report in Cork's Virgin Media Park, where it's Ireland 5 points to England's 7 in the Women's Six Nations. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench with our very own Sarah McKenzie Foley. Sarah, how are things going in Virgin Media Park at the moment?
Yeah, it's a really, really tight game down here. 5 points to 7 in England's favour at the moment at halftime, but it's been a really, really close fought battle. Ireland defensively have been absolutely incredible, particularly Dan O'Brien at 10, and I have to say the atmosphere is absolutely brilliant. It's a sold-out game, and the fans are really showing up for the girls. It's great.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about, the atmosphere in the ground. Do you think it's great to see, you know, Irish teams travelling around the country rather than just being Dublin focused?
Oh, completely. Yeah, absolutely. I think the more these games get through time, and it's really clear that the appetite is here. And as I say, the fans have been just behind the girls all the way, every turnover, every kick. They're just screaming their lungs out, which is brilliant.
Do you think we'll ever see the Irish rugby team down at Parky Cave someday?
I don't know. I mean, we'd love to see it, but I think there's probably a bit of politics involved in that, which we'd have to see how it plays out. But definitely, I think you'd see a huge crowd there if it ever did happen.
The D4 dads wouldn't like that one. Who, as you mentioned a few players already. Where do you think this game is going to be won and lost now in the second half?
Yeah, I think the biggest area that Ireland have been having trouble with is the scrum. They've already given away quite a few scrum penalties, and England are really benefiting from that. It's hard for Ireland at times to build a platform when they are struggling at set piece. They've had a couple of line-out misses as well, so I think if they can tighten up their set piece, they'll be in a really good position, and again, just keep up that defensive energy, because I think England at the moment are really finding it hard to find a way through.
Ireland gave Italy a hammering the last time out, but are you surprised by their performance today?
I don't think so. I think, you know, even during the anthems, there was such a buzz, and the girls were clearly really, really up for the game. I think there's just a huge amount of energy. I think as well, after last year's results, they really want to show up and show that they're better than that now, and they absolutely are a better team. So I think it's really impressive, the performance they're putting in. I'm not surprised by it at all, but I think it's going to be a huge effort, and hopefully in the second half we'll have some impact subs as well that can come on and really take the game over the line.
Yeah, I was just going to ask about the strength of our bench. How strong is it?
I think in an atmosphere like this, if the starters can keep it close, I think that'll be a huge help for the substitutions coming on. I think they'll feel they can definitely get the job done, and fingers crossed they can.
I don't expect you to have seen the game. I know you're in Virgin Media Park for us, but what do you make first thoughts of the Munster result anyway?
Yeah, I mean, it's massively disappointing, of course. I think, unfortunately, it is symptomatic of what we've seen from Munster all season. You know, we see these incredible performances that are, you know, followed by a big dip, and that's exactly what we've seen, you know, between those two games and France. Obviously, it is very difficult, 6-day turnaround, you know, with travel involved on both sides. I think it was always going to be a big ask, and that Bordeaux team is full of absolute stars as well. But I mean, I don't think anybody expected them to put that level of score on us. You know, there was a bit of a resurgence there towards the end, but unfortunately just too little too late.
Maybe not so much today, but what have you made of the recent form of Craig Casey and our very own Jack Rowley?
I think, to be fair, they've been fantastic. As you said, I didn't see all of the game today, so I can't give too much of an assessment of today, but
they weren't amazing anyway, I'll put it to you that way.
Yeah, largely, I think definitely last week, certainly, they were fantastic. And I think, obviously, Casey being out with injury for a while, he was just gunning to go. But maybe a step too far, obviously, today. And I think, yeah, I think it's really disappointing. And I suppose the main thing for Munster is that the whole season, they've been trying to find some level of consistency, and they've been struggling to do that. So I think that's their biggest challenge probably right now.
Do you now think we can make a push for the URC?
I think so. I think as long as that result doesn't, I suppose, damage the morale too much, I think there's still potential in that team. You know, it's the same players, whether it's a good week or a bad week. So I think it's really more down to just tapping into where the lack of consistency is coming from and just trying to sort that out. But I guess it's hard to say whether they can fix that between now and the end of the season, or whether it's going to be a job for the new coach coming in.
All right, I leave you go. I can hear the teams coming back out in the background. Sarah McKenzie Foley, thanks so much for speaking to us.
Yeah, no problem.
Cheers. Well, it's not a great start to the second half for Ireland, as England have gotten over the line and converted a try. So it's 5 points Ireland to 14 points England as it stands in Virgin Media Park in Cork. And as you probably heard there, Munster are now out of a European competition, losing to Bordeaux on a scoreline of 47 points to 29. A fairly disappointing performance all around. Sticking with the rugby, and earlier in the week I got the chance to catch up with the man who scored one of Ireland's most important tries of all time.
More impressive Irish scrum, and O'Gara with a little kick, and there's belief there for Ireland, and maybe there's something in this. Maybe the opportunity is there. It is Tommy Moe! Magic! Would you believe that? Two tries.
Superb, the precision, the difference. And Tommy Moe, fantastic. Everything about that try, because Ireland were brave. They went looking for it.
It was, of course, Tommy Moe. Short interview here, but enjoy. This was done in association with FraudSmart.
Tommy Moe, how are you keeping anyway?
Great, lads, yeah. How are you?
Good now, good. You think they'll get the job done in the Champions Cup overall? Is it the year they finally get over the line?
Well, on myself and Donico Callan always flag that we think that, listen, the resources, the players that they have, I mean, it's pretty much the Irish team with Snyman, Barrett, Slimani on top of that. So they have an incredible team, an incredible squad, and I think this year could be the one for them.
If there's a team out there you think is fixed to stop them the best, who do you think it will be?
I think Toulouse are obviously the team. They've caused them so much trouble the last couple of years, but I think Toulouse up against Toulon this weekend is going to be difficult. Bordeaux against Munster, it's going to be interesting to see how that goes, but Bordeaux, if it clicks for them, they can cause anybody trouble. But I do think that Glasgow this weekend is going to be a massive hurdle for Leinster.
Moving to Munster, were you surprised to see Jack Crowley not get that central contract?
I think that it's an interesting one, and certainly for David Humphreys, it was a big question mark. Does he give, you know, he gave Sam Prendergast a Leinster contract. It would be difficult maybe to give Jack Crowley, who's what you would see at the moment, Sam Prendergast understudy, a central contract. I think going forward, they both will be on a central contract, and I think they're both the future for Irish rugby. But listen, they're both still young. They're both getting experience under their belt, but I'd say it won't be long. Jack signed a 2-year deal. I would imagine in 2 years he'll definitely be on a national contract.
I was going to ask you, with the form he's on now, is Jack now a dark horse for getting into the Lions squad?
He's playing well. I think he was exceptional last weekend. That drop goal was just incredible. I think he's still a bit away from the Lions squad. I think, you know, himself and Sam Prendergast have a great battle. Two top quality tens. I really enjoy both of them playing. There's a huge amount of attention on the pair of them. I think it's a case of maybe just stepping back and letting them get on with business. And, you know, they'll come up against each other later on the campaign as well. And if one or either of them make it on the Lions, it'd be fantastic.
What have you made of Craig Casey since his return? He's been amazing.
Craig Casey has been amazing. He really has. To come back from a long-term injury like he has and just to come into the form. I mean, when we used to play, we used to think it'd take 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 matches to play yourself back into form. But boy, he's just bounced straight into it. And himself and Jack Crowley have just... The synergy between them has been amazing as well. And I'm delighted for Craig to see him playing so well.
The battle we have between Sam and Jack, do you think that could transfer over to the scrum halves between Jameson and Craig?
I think it needs to. I think that Jameson Gibson-Park needs more pressure put on him. He is a fantastic, probably one of Ireland's best players. But competition brings out the best in everybody. And I think the more that somebody is breathing down your neck, particularly in that 9 jersey, is only going to bring out the best in their play.
How do you then see the Bordeaux game going on Saturday?
Munster-Bordeaux, it's going to be a tricky one. We were speaking to Joey Carberry on the podcast this week, and it was really interesting to hear him talk about the training and the level of player that they have over there. It's fascinating, the likes of Biel Barry, Penault, the danger men they have out wide, Jalabert at 10, the big pack that, if Bordeaux turn up with the style of rugby that they are capable of, it's going to be a very difficult day for Munster to be able to try and keep up with them. But what we saw with Munster against La Rochelle is there were no lost causes. They chased everything down, and once they're able to turn that screw and the Munster sport is able to come, you know, take over, anything can happen. No Ulster players started in the Six Nations this year. We had very small representation in the Irish squad even this year. But I think Ulster are in a building phase. There's a number of players who would have been involved in Ireland squads in the last couple of years who've been out injured, some senior players there. But I think the future is bright for Ulster. There's a lot of young guys that I think that will certainly be playing for Ireland in the not too distant future.
Do you think there's just something there where they just get a bit easily overlooked?
No, I don't think so. I think that Andy Farrell is fairly fair in his selection. I don't think Ulster players really could justify their selection in the Irish squad at the minute. There's one or two that were out injured that would have been close, but I think it's a case of putting together back-to-back performances. Some of the performances they've had this year probably haven't been at that level. When you look at the likes of the Leinster players that are playing just such a different level of rugby.
Paul O'Connell taking over as interim coach. When you were playing with him, was that always destined to be that he'd go into coaching?
He was always destined for coaching, but it was whether he wanted to coach. I know that that was a question that he had. And for a number of years, he was able to step away from rugby and maybe find out what he wanted to do in the future. And I think it's brilliant for Ireland to have him in that conveyor belt, to be getting that experience under the likes of Andy Farrell and Simon Easterby, and now to take over the head coach role. I think he's going to be brilliant. And you know, people talk about the fear of God and his wonderful speeches, but actually he's a really, really clever guy, a really smart person in terms of knowing the game of rugby, and I think he's going to be a valuable asset to Ireland going forward.
Seamus O'Reilly was just 5 years old when he and his 10 siblings sadly lost their mum.
How many times a day does 10 siblings get shouted at you?
Oh, 10 siblings. I tend to just stay in the car so I can avoid it. But yeah, it's more in a night out when the people have a few pints on them, but 10 siblings is going to follow me to my grave.
Does the joke, is it at this stage now where you're just kind of like...
Well, I don't know if I can say to the people, but yeah, sometimes you do feel like it.
Do you think, what's it feel like now to be an Irish meme icon forevermore?
Listen, it's a bit of fun. To be honest with you, I've watched the video so many times as well. It makes me laugh. And we've all said stupid things, but most people haven't said it live on television. But listen, if you watch me in Ireland, I pretty much do that every morning. So it's something that I laugh at. And to be fair, there could be worse things to be a meme for.
Outside of yourself, what's your favourite Irish meme?
Oh, well, I love the fella falling on ice. That's always a good one. Comes around, yeah. So, well, I'm up there with him, and unfortunately, I have been found.
Seamus O'Reilly was just 5 years old when he and his 10 siblings sadly lost their mum.
The 10 siblings will never get old. That interview with Tommy O was once again done with thanks to Fraud Smart. Disappointing night once again at Turner's Cross for Cork City, losing 2-0 to St. Pat's. Here's gaffer Tim Clancy speaking to our very own Rory O'Hagan for LOI TV after the game.
Tim, I suppose ultimately you're undone there by two moments of magic from St. Pat's.
Yeah, I think 4 minutes, a 4 minute spell just before half time. Look, Chris Forrester's been doing stuff like that for a long, long time. Frustrating for us, like, look, it takes a deflection off Malik and goes right into the top, or sorry, off Milan, and goes right into the top corner, and then we concede a really poor second goal, so we probably have a better header on it, but we don't pick up the seconds. And Kavanagh, Brando takes a brilliant strike early and right into the bottom corner. So yeah, look, really frustrating. I thought for large spells of the first half we were excellent.
Yeah,
I thought for large spells of the second half we were excellent as well. So against top teams, if you have moments that you don't maybe get that extra yard closer to people or whatever else, you get punished at this level.
Milan and Beng is a free header when it's nil all. Could have made it 1-0, would have made it a completely different game.
Yeah, I think, look, Milan, he actually probably gets above it too much and he heads it into the ground and it goes past the post. But I think, yeah, Joe Nang's made maybe two or three brilliant saves, especially the one from Benny Kuto. It's an excellent save. He makes a good one from Derek Crowley and Cahill as well. He's good handling. And Josh Fitzpatrick, I thought, was brilliant again when he came on, positive, and flashed a few across the goal that Joe held well as well. So, Yeah, look, really frustrating. I think the biggest moment in the game is when it's a foul on Carl O'Sullivan for a penalty. It's not given. Rewind, maybe. End of the first half, Axel Schoberg is going into the corner flag, falls on the ball and grabs it with his hand, and the referee gives a free out. Calls is a far more foul than that, and we don't get it. So decisions and moments like that, that probably brings the game back to 2-1 if we score the penalty, and then it's a completely different ball game. But it's frustrating because we just don't get them decisions.
Yeah, Forrester did look like he had hands in the back of the man rode him.
It's not even looks like it was. I know you've seen it back, you've watched on the telly, it's a foul. It's a penalty and I should be given, and it's a big moment in games like that. You don't get the decisions down here.
And you're booked then for trying to explain that?
No, look, I remonstrate, obviously, but we've got video on the bench and you can see it. It's a penalty. It's a penalty. There's no other way about it. The easy decision to give is just play on. It's all right. Don't upset St. Pat's. They're up near the top of the league. No one cares about Cork City.
Sorry, really, that's the way it is.
Isn't it like that? What about Sligo Rovers here when we had four penalty shouts? John Matten made a save, one of the probably saves of the season. Not given. It can't just be accepted that penalty decisions aren't given to the teams that deserve them. Simple as that.
Especially when you can see clearly back on the replay.
It's a penalty. Mm. Like, so what decision was made? There was no contact? No, there was contact, yeah. He's gone through the back from him. Did he touch the ball? No. So why is it not given? Did you think it was a penalty?
Yeah.
Yeah. Phil, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think everybody in the stadium thought it was a penalty bar. The one person that counts.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. So, like, you've got to pick the lads up back up the big game on Monday?
I don't have to pick them up too much. I thought they were excellent. I thought they were superb. Carl O'Sullivan showed why he's the best young player in the country tonight. I thought he was superb. I know Mason was the other end of the pitch. He's gone for 2 million. Carl must be worth about 8 million then, if that's the case. Carl played as a centre forward tonight, and I thought. Anybody that was here will say that he was head and shoulders above everybody else on the pitch technically. Maybe Chris Forrester is the only one that matched him for technique, but I hope Cork City get the value that Cahill is worth, because he showed tonight that he's class above everyone else.
He's absolutely terrific. Just injury wise, the number of players still out, anyone coming back in the next couple of weeks, or how are we looking?
Monday, hopefully. It might be a bit early for Greg, but next Friday we should have Greg and Harry Nevin back as well, please God. Brilliant to get Evan McLaughlin on the pitch. I thought he was excellent when he came on. Showed composure, his versatility as well as energy, and his deliveries from set pieces as well were a massive part of us winning the league last season. So it was brilliant to get him back on the pitch, and it was also good to get Josh and Matty Murray and a few others more minutes as well. So yeah, look, Monday might be a bit too much of a tight turnaround, but we're hoping to have Greg next Friday and possibly Harry as well, and then Sean and Malik will be another 2 or 3 weeks away.
Thanks, Tim.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.
Tim didn't hold back in that one. To ladies Gaelic football now, and Galway have come from behind. They beat Cork in the Division 2 final in the ladies football league this afternoon. Elena Curran had the full time report.
Galway have been crowned LGFA Division 2 league final champions here in Croke Park, seeing off Cork on a scoreline of 2-8 to 1-5. At the break, there was little to report on, given much of the scoring had come from free kicks, but things really came alive in the second half with Galway coming out swinging. Alva Davern hit a point for them before Lindsay Noon sent the green flag waving and really turned the game on its head. And just after that, Roisin Leonard was the one to hit the back of the net for them after some fantastic work from Kate Slevin. Olivia Dibley and Hannah Noon also kicked points for the eventual winners in the second half, while Emma Cleary and Katie Quirk notched scores for Cork. Having reached last year's All-Ireland final and lost, Galway will have been delighted to come away and right some wrongs in today's LGFA Division 2 league final here in Croke Park and come away with some silverware. Full time, Galway 2-8, Cork 1-5.
And Joe McCarthy spoke to boss Joe Carroll after the game.
Joe, obviously, disappointment. You were doing all right up to half-time, but what happened there at the start of the second half? Did you just lose your way a bit?
Yeah, Joe, I suppose we were very pleased with the first half performance. Felt maybe we should be up a bit more because we gave them a few scores out of our own, lost the possession more than anything else, but just we lost our way. We gave away a goal and a point. I suppose in the less
the 90 seconds, and that really turned the match. And I suppose when we had Aoife Healy sending in, that made it very difficult for us. We kept fighting, but we never looked like we were going to score after that.
You had Galway score a small open play in the first half. Things looked to be going well. Were you surprised that you weren't able to find another gear to get back into it in the final quarter?
Yeah, I suppose like the two goals, like I suppose when we look back in the video, we'll have nightmares about them because we had the ball in our own position in both cases and gave it away. And we got caught in the back foot a small bit, and that was very disappointing because I thought our defence in particular played very well.
And just finally for me, obviously disappointment at losing at Croke Park, but the overall progress by the team since you and your backroom team were just in, you know, 6 wins out of 7 in the league, disappointing to lose the league final, but there's a steady progress there?
Yeah, there's steady progress. I suppose we were hoping for performance today. We got a performance in the first half. We didn't get a performance in the second half. Galway, I thought, were very solid, and they always looked like they were going to win the match. But look, it's a base to work on for championship, which we have now in 2 weeks against Kerry. So we'll have to try and sit down and look at it again and put our best foot forward for the Kerry match.
So in the second half, there are times, Joe, the defensively Galway, like they go into a shell, and you found it difficult to break them down. Maybe something difficult. They just made it very hard for you to get through them.
Yeah, I suppose that's, you know, we held the ball. I suppose when we were open the first half for the last 2 minutes of the half, and they couldn't take it off us. And I suppose when they got ahead with the 4 points, they were dictating the play to us, which means that they pulled a lot of players behind the ball when we got possession of the ball, and we found it awful difficult to try and break them down. So I suppose that's something that we will have to look at again.
So obviously, as you said, you don't have much time to the gear ones in front. You've got Kerry coming on the horizon very, very fast. But the players will have learned an awful lot from today ahead of that game.
As should they will, like, and there's a lot of your players there, and we introduced a few more towards the end there. And we will learn from it, and the management will learn from it, because we have only 2 weeks now to try and get something sorted for the first round against Kerry, which will be a huge battle, you know. They're in the final here very shortly, so they could be going in as league champions, meeting us as league champions and All-Ireland champions. So it's going to be a battle galore to try and beat them.
Looking at the second goal, Joe, I mean, I know you probably haven't seen a playback yet, but did you feel that maybe Sarah was fouled? Or was it too early to say this?
It looked on the screen that she got a small bit of a drag, all right, because she had possession of the ball and she just spilled it just as she got the tackle. But I'd have to look at it closer again to see whether it was a free in the video again.
Joe also caught up with Daniel Moynihan, the Galway manager.
Right, Daniel, first of all, congratulations. Half-time things were not going well. You hadn't scored from open play. Was it the experience of this team and being here in similar situations in the past that helped you overcome a really strong opponent?
I think it was the frustration at our own performance that kind of saw us through in that second half. I think we were disappointed with ourselves. We left quite a few shots, you know, dropped a few short into Sarah Murphy's hand. And from that aspect, we knew we were getting opportunities, but we just weren't taking them. So it was key for us to kind of just push on a little bit more.
Winning Division 2 and winning a trophy is always a good thing. It's good for momentum going into the Connacht Championship and the All-Ireland Championship. But the fact that you've gotten like Cork back up at the first time of asking, that's a bigger boost, I'd imagine, for the players.
Absolutely. It's Division 1 is where you want to be, because, you know, you're going to be tested from the very start of the season to the end of the season. And there's no easy games. So it was important for us that we rectified, I suppose, last year with you know, with the results that kind of went against us. Even though there were a point here, a point there, it was important that we got back up to Division 1 straight away.
And just finally for me, your two goals obviously were key, but the fact that they were opportunistic and that you forced turnovers, a very good thing for you heading into the rest of the year.
Yeah, exactly. Work rate is, I suppose, the minimal you ask from your players, and they showed that in abundance in that second half. And even the subs that came in, you know, they worked hard. They ensured that, you know, we weren't going to concede when we had that small bit of a cushion ourselves. So delighted with the performance, delighted with the players. Come on, thanks.
So I suppose now kind of pushing forward, I suppose obviously next focus will be Connacht Championship, I suppose. Want to do well there and kind of, I suppose, keep pushing on. I hope this will be kind of a springboard for better things, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. It's coming thick and fast. I suppose they'll have the few evenings off now just to kind of recharge themselves, and then it's a case you're looking towards Leitrim and Mayo straight away. So, you know, Mayo are coming off a tough league campaign, but similar to us last year, maybe danger in the high grass, as they say, that they've come at us looking for a Connacht title. So we need to be aware of that. And obviously, you know, with Leitrim, they went all the way to an All-Ireland Intermediate title, so we can't take them for granted. We have to be switched on for that game when it comes.
And I guess, I suppose, playing in Croke Park, do you feel that players are kind of just getting a bit more experience here now? And obviously, Kilkerry and Clonburn players, especially, quite very used to playing here now as well.
Yeah, exactly. We have a large contingent that I suppose used to it, but I think the big thing is that it's in the go with Jersey now, and they've experienced last, but they more importantly, they've experienced win. So, you know, that was a big thing for us, that we were capable of going up to Croke Park. Whatever was being thrown at us, we could deal with it and we could come away with a win, and that was massive for us.
Thanks very much.
And lastly, Jure caught up with Róisín Leonard, the Galway forward.
Róisín, congratulations. Division 2 National League champions, unbeaten throughout the campaign so far. Everything going exceptionally well, but that first half performance today, it looked like it mightn't go your way. What was said at half time, and why the how hard was that second half come back?
Yeah, to be honest, we were so poor in that first half and weren't happy with ourselves at all. The management didn't actually have to say a whole lot at half time because we knew it ourselves. We just tried to figure out a few small little tweaks to our game plan and obviously just get our head in the game a little bit for the second half, and I think we played an awful lot better in the second half.
Suppose goal there at the start of the kind of still level there, kind of in between second half is huge, but I suppose Kate Levin had a huge part of playing that.
Yeah, massive turnover from Kate Levin, give her all the praise. It was just a tap in for me, but she works so hard in every game, and them turnovers, they're always coming her way, so I'm so glad I was on the end of it, but she did all the hard work.
And I suppose you've seen your freeze in the first half kind of kept going in the game, I suppose. You've seen, we were saying, one of the rare players, it seems like hitting the ball off the ground as well.
Yeah, I've actually learned a little bit to go back to off the hands as well, because different conditions and different pitches sometimes don't suit off the ground, so I have to try and have both to use. But yeah, we just didn't play well at all in the first half. We got all our scores from frees mostly, and well, we had chances, we just didn't take them. We were a little bit scattered and we didn't stick to our plans. We got caught in the middle where Cork had set traps for us, so we tried to avoid that in the second half. I think we did it fairly well.
And a few of the Kilkerry Clonburn players, you really saw their influence there. Obviously Nicola Ward, she's driving forward pretty much the whole game.
Yeah, but I think like we need to use them smartly, because other teams are obviously aware of their traits and their running ability, so we fell into traps in the first half, and then we avoided those traps in the second half very well, and our athletes and our runners did very, very well in the middle third.
I suppose the important thing is for Celtic Galway to hopefully push on from here, because it's been a while since I had a kind of big kind of final in Croke Park, I guess.
Yeah, we've had some bad days in Croke Park, so it's actually really, really nice to have a positive end to today. We're not used to winning things, and I'm not afraid to say that. I'm just absolutely delighted to win today, and I don't care if it's just the league, we're very, very happy to win it.
After the fact there, it was talked about the momentum kind of element. Do you think this will be a big factor now going forward?
Yeah, like even just mentally, just to get over that losing in Croke Park. I know it's like some girls' first day out here and they have a positive sense from it now. We've had some horrendous days here and we have to try and wipe those from our memory. So it'll definitely help. Momentum will help, and we're looking forward to the Connacht Championship now.
How are you feeling going into the Championship now?
Yeah, well, we're very excited. It's very different for us to have to play Leitrim. It's a new addition for us, and all my time playing senior, I've never had any other game, only Mayo. So it's exciting, it's different, and it's an extra two games for us, so it's a brilliant, yeah. Perfect. Thank you.
Thanks,
guys.
All right, the ref's whistle has gone for half-time here on the Big Red Bench. Come back to us in the second half. We'll have hurling camogie action, as well as hearing from Cork great Sean O'Gahalpin.
Cork's Good Times. Red FM.
Welcome back to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times. Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next half hour. Bit of news from Virgin Media Park, and it's not going great for the Irish rugby team. They're currently losing to England 49 points, currently to 5, so they haven't scored in the second half yet. There's only 4 minutes on the clock left in Cork. A disappointing one considering the atmosphere, but that's the lay of the land. To a bit of hurling now, and in the Munster Minor Hurling Championship, Cork beat Clare today on a scoreline of 3-24 to 3-17. And after the game, Dennis Hurley caught up with the Bannister, Fergal McCormack.
Yeah, I suppose that's the main takeaway. You know, second away match, two wins on the board. You know, a lot of good things to be happy with.
Yeah, look, obviously the win first and foremost, we're delighted with the win, and I suppose I was a small bit apprehensive coming down here. It's coming down to Clare, to Tulla, they were after beating Tipperary last week.
Yeah.
And knowing that they're good as well and bringing back Rogers and Murphy like into the forward line, they're going to create a different kind of a headache for us, which they did.
Yeah.
pretty early, and with the two goals. But, you know, I think our shape kind of
gradually kind of got right, and we cut off the space, like, you know.
Yeah.
And when we did, like, and the lads really from the back, like, over the launch pad, and, you know, we're probably lucky even at half time to be only a point down, in my opinion. Like, I'd have to look at the stats properly to see what the situation was, but the second half was really, really good.
It
was, proud of the lads, and their application and attitude was top class.
And even considering the tour they go, is that you don't know how that'll affect the team, and, like, especially when you're only dealing with 16 and 17 year olds, but to get the goal back straight away and then to just kind of start putting over the points and get ahead, and, like you say, to, after playing into a stiff breeze, like, to be only going a point behind, and then I think they got 8 out of the first 9 and it started the second half.
Well, like in fairness, like what our backs and stuff, like, you know, forwards up front there, scores can come from anywhere, like, you know? So it's not like let's say just Murphy and Rogers that Clare had, let's say, in the first half here today. Like, our fellas could come from anywhere, shoot from anywhere, and are very accurate, and their turn is really good, so it's, they can on form, they're frighteningly, you know. And you know, that's, to be fair, like, anytime you see these guys training, like, you know, their application and attitude is top class. And, they got their just rewards, as far as I'm concerned, anyway, you know. And, you know, every team, like, wants and expects their team to do well, but I firmly believe that we'd put in a performance, and if we're beaten by a better team, we're beaten by a better team. But they're great lads, and
I think in Limerick 2 weeks ago, I think, was it all but one of the points was from open play. Today you needed a few from the frees and 65s, but to have someone like Craig O'Sullivan with such accuracy, you know, be so reliable at that age, like.
Exactly, like, you know, Craig, another example of someone that just loves hurling and always hurling his hand, and even the stats, his stats for the Mon was unbelievable. Top class this year from a Hartley Cup perspective, like, and this is with another 2 years to go, like, you know. So when the pressure came on there in the second half and we needed someone to hit the freeze, come at the hour, come at the man, it was great. It was very good.
And then obviously Callum with the 3 goals, you know, it's just, I suppose, whatever they're producing in the pitch to get the moment in terms of forwards, like.
Yeah, like, I mean, look, like, again, and Callum is underage again next year, you know, and for him, like, he got his scoring rewards today, like, he kind of scavenged a bit, little bit more the last time,
against
he got his scoring rewards, and again, that's what he can do. He's frightening, he's pacey, he's, you know, he'll take players on and get turnovers and stuff, so he takes a bit of minding as well.
And I suppose 317 conceded, but, you know, obviously he scored 7 more than that, something to work on maybe. But I suppose in modern hurling, teams are going to get scores like that, and you have to kind of almost take it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Look, some of our management team might say that will take me to task, I suppose, about the 317 concede.
Yeah.
But it's a game of hurling, and you're going to concede.
As
long as there's not stupid kind of, you know, structural or shape kind of mistakes, which maybe there might have been, if when we look back at it in the first half, you'd say that's going to happen. But if you score more, you're going to win the game, you know. And and we've good shooting forwards, and you know, the two lads, even the half back line and midfielders will pop up as well for scores.
Yeah, and 2 weeks now, get back to Cork for the last 2 games, and I suppose just kind of keep going as you have been.
Let's ride the red wave there now, Dennis, and you know, the seniors, I think I've said to you there,
yeah,
the, like, you know, they have a great template, and they're something to be admired, and if we can replicate anything that they're doing at the moment, like, you know, let's go with it, you know.
Okay, perfect stuff.
To Camogie now, and tomorrow Cork go head to head with Galway, the 2025 Very Camogie National League Division 1A final in Simple Stadium in Thurles with a 2:15 throw-in. And ahead of the clash between two of Camogie senior grade's biggest rivals, Ger McCarthy spoke to Cork senior manager Ger Manley about the Rebels' prospects of bringing more silverware back to Leaside.
Now, here on the Big Red Bench, we're delighted to be joined by the Cork senior Camogie manager Ger Manley ahead of Sunday's Very Camogie Division 1A National League final between Cork and Galway at the FPD Simple Stadium in Thurles with a 2:15 throw-in. Lots to look forward to in this one. Ger, thanks very much for joining us on the bench again.
Yeah, no problem, Ger. Looking forward to it. No, we have the game for us. It's a good test for us now with Ger ahead.
Yes, now you've played Galway in the previous game, but you were already qualified for the National League final at that stage. Galway got the win over you, but did you learn anything that you didn't already know about this team?
I thought Galway, look, I'm supposed to be trying out a few players and that, but with a few injuries as well. But in all fairness to Galway, they're well up for us. Nothing new with Galway, they've beaten us the last 6 or 7 league games we've played against them. And I suppose, look, we learned a bit from the game, which hopefully we can bring into the game. I suppose that we learned about Galway, but look, they're a very good team. I don't think there's too much between Galway and Galway the last few years. That I've been involved, but I suppose we get the upper hand of them in the championship, but they definitely am in the league games. They seem to have a hand. But look, this is as good as championship that you'll get next Sunday. So hopefully, look, we have to improve. That's what we're saying to the girls the last 2 weeks. And I think that the girls are really focused on the job and Sunday.
Yeah, that's the thing. As you said, it's a big game. It's a National League final, but not too dissimilar to the Cork Senior Footballers men's and the Cork Senior Hurlers or the Cork LGFA team. You're using the league to get ready for the championship. Would it be a bonus to win this league? I know you want to win it, Jerry. You've mentioned it before, but it's all about getting ready for championship.
Look, it is, but I suppose it's a national final. There's only 2 national finals. Do you really play for in Camogie, that's the league final and the All-Ireland final? So look, we know where we put it. An effort into the league this year, and I suppose we qualified after the 4 games. So look, we probably eased off a small bit, but I mean that didn't take away from the performance of Galway. The last, I thought they were very good. I thought we were a bit off as ourselves, but that's complacency from the management. Players a bit of bored, I suppose. But in all fairness to the players, they've not done well in the last 2 weeks. So I'm hoping to see a much better performance on Sunday.
Yeah, was that the bonus for you in the backroom team, I suppose, Ger? Like, you didn't get the result, but you didn't get the performance you needed either the last day, and that's given everyone the focus just to kick on now and move up a notch.
Yeah, actually, we have to really. Galway have moved up a notch. I thought they were very good the last day, and physically they were very strong. They had a couple of players back. Look, I suppose their conversion rate is very good. You know, they got 19 points, door 13, and look, I think it's a classroom. For us, we have to improve in certain areas, and if we can get that improvement, I think there's a very good chance. You're not going to be brilliant every day you go out. You know, I suppose we've been the standard bearers and we're the hunt a little bit now, but I mean, I think Galway there are giving the credit of nothing between the 2 teams that we've seen. Hopefully the players that will come back might give us a bit of an edge, but Galway have a couple of players to come back as well. But look, we really want to win it. I think any final you play in, it's a big thing, and I think for us, I don't think we've won a league. I didn't realise that 2013, but you know, it's important. Look, it's important. Look, or I suppose today we want to get back to Croke Park and all this, but I said this is a step along the way.
Big bonus for you and the backroom team as well to see Amy O'Connor playing so much of that game and getting 5 points. Important now that she gets that time under her belt.
Yeah, it's just good for Amy. Was injured there for a good part of the year. We lost Easy O'Regan, was a huge loss. Of Lucy Kelly in the pan, they were out, and I suppose that. He's back. He's back directly as well now for the weekend. She's on the panel, which is great to get her back as well. So we're getting all the players back. It's what the big thing for us. But we just have to be careful that play on the Saturday. Look, there's not much we can do about it. Just hopefully they come through on Saturday. And Libby and Aoife Healy.
Yeah, it's not ideal with Hannah Looney, Libby Coppinger and Aoife Healy playing in the Cork LGFA's National League Division 2 final against Galway up in Croke Park the day before. Yeah. Nothing new, Ger, when it comes to the dual player issues. I'm not going to ask you to regurgitate them.
Nah.
This is not something that you didn't anticipate. These are two finals.
No. We minded them in training. I think the footballers always were going to get to find the. They've been back and they've been going well. Joe's going well, and I suppose for us, I suppose we looked at our fixtures, and I suppose the fact we had a couple of home matches, and we won our first 2 league games, which made us we had a very good chance of getting there. Once we beat Tip, we knew we'd beat Tip. We'd be in the finals, so like we knew just coming. And look, we just mind the players now. That we're trying to get a bit of recovery into them on Saturday night, and whatever. But it's going to be hard. But look, they're 3 brilliant players. They're 3 brilliant girls. What they do. Look, I'd never stop a dual player playing because I think it's great. I think they're 3 very talented players, and they're very important to the footballers as they are to the Camogie team. So, look, we're just going to embrace and drive on. Isn't the first time it happened, then it's not going to be the last. We don't think it's going to happen.
How happy are you with defensively how you've been setting up and how you've been defending, bar maybe the Galway game?
Yeah, we've been quite good all the year. I suppose we had a couple of interests. I suppose after the Galway game, I think those were the trophy cards. But I suppose that we had a good few changes. I suppose we take I think we used 13-1 players in the league, which like, I think every member of the panel bar 1 or 2 might have got a game, you know, which was important as well. But I suppose we lost our shape a bit against Galway. We've been very good defensively.
conceding the ball, I suppose, in the league so far, and hopefully we keep that going. But the rest of their season team, like we have Mackie, Mel Callan, Larkin, and Aloney, Thompson, like, I mean, like, name your players there, defensively, they're very good. Do you know what I mean? The big thing, I suppose, that you keep it down the chances of their team, but Galway are an exceptionally good team, so it's going to be hard next Sunday. And I suppose we'll have to create a few more goal chances than we did previously to win the match.
On Sunday, April 13th, the very Camogie Division 1A National League final between Cork and Galway takes place at FBD Semple Stadium in Thurles. Cork versus Galway, 2:15 throw-in. Germandy to you and the backroom team and the players from the Big Red Bench. All the best with that one.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you.
Yeah, safe travels for anyone headed to that one. Good fans for fans of Cork City women's team. They're leading Waterford 4-1 in the Munster Derby in Turner's Cross, with time still to be played. Now, sticking to hurling, and Off the Ball have released a new episode of Inner Drive in association with Allianz on their YouTube. It's all about the Cork great Sean O'Gohalpine. It's a fantastic watch and listen if you get the chance. It's 40 minutes long, so I won't get to play the full episode, but here's the first 15 minutes.
There was no debate on it. If one knew my journey, that speech was going to be in Irish.
If I don't trust you, Fiji to Corky, or does that Corky get Cork to Corky?
The only Irish I had coming to Cork was Slánte, because there was a souvenir hanging up in a kitchen wall in Sydney. I started to go to school in the morning, and I'm in fifth class, and I'm starting to grasp this new language, which is like Hindu or Mandarin to me. I'm so far behind my peers. I want the question to my dad, do I really need to learn Irish? But you just trust your parents that they're doing the right thing for you. I go through a few painful years, embarrassing years of trying to learn Irish. I'm 48 years of age now. Very thankful that I went through that painful experience. You don't make that journey alone. Along the way, you need help from all different types of people. And I get that in buckets and spades.
Irish is obviously very important, and people would have probably heard before, you know, the idea of dressing you up on the green on St. Patrick's Day and making sure you listen to the All-Ireland finals on the radio when they were being relayed in Australia. So I suppose that sense of Irishness was probably inbuilt in you as kids very early as well, was it?
The Irish story of me is really my dad's story, because basically my dad is from County Fermanagh, so Irish wouldn't been taught when he was growing up in primary school. He leaves the country at a very young age, say in his late teens, to go working. So this is Ireland, 1970s, you know, not much work around where he's from. So he goes abroad and he starts working on different building sites in England, number one, and then he goes to Australia and he starts working with other nationalities, and they're all yapping away in their own language, which is fine, and he finds that beautiful. So they think my dad is English.
Right.
Because he talks English. And dad is, it's a constant battle for him to prove himself that he's not English. And then that's where the identity really kicks in for him, you know. And they ask him, well, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Ireland. Oh, very Irish. And do you speak Irish? He says, yeah, we do have a language. He says, can you speak it? No, I can't. That's the driving force behind him to, if he did have a family, that they would speak Irish. He goes to Fiji on a holiday, meets mum, who has left her small, tiny island of Rotuma, which is 400 miles northwest of mainland Fiji. But the island is so small, I mean, there's nothing on the island, you know, work-wise. When you finish secondary school, most people just go to mainland Fiji for work.
What was it like landing here from Sydney in 88?
I'm devastated, demoralised, just questioning what am I doing here, because basically I should be on the sandy shore near Manly in Sydney, Australia.
I'm Brian Henderson, this is News Centre 9.
Lived in Sydney, Australia for 8 years at that stage. What a great upbringing, great place to grow up.
Dad would often talk about Ireland, you know, but to us that was an imaginary place far, far away, you know.
We lived in a two-bedroom house with a growing family, so you had to share bed with a sibling, so he'd wake myself and Dale up 12:30 in Australia, and because of the time difference, the All-Ireland final was on a 3:30 here, and he'd listen to the All-Ireland commentary on radio, and he'd get us to listen to it. Myself and Dale hadn't a notion, hadn't a clue what was going on or what we were listening to.
It's safe, and it's safe by Michael Cadini.
But it seemed to be important to Dad.
I suppose when we first came here, I suppose my first kind of hit of Ireland was like getting off that plane in Dublin, you know, where boom, you were hit with the weather.
I must be wearing 10 jumpers at that stage just to keep me warm. And I experienced rain that I've never experienced ever before, where it just rains constantly for days and days with no stop.
It was an awful, you know, awful experience. And I remember looking at Dad saying, geez, what are you after doing to us here? You know, and then travelling down here. I suppose settling in Cork was probably the best decision that he ever made.
The next challenge then is I know no one here. There's like I'm 10 years of age. So I'm frightened a small bit. You have to start your life again, and it's like you're on stage trying to prove your existence in the place and trying to win over new people and friends and all of that. I'm not painting a good picture of, you know, Cork and the north side of Cork City, but fast forward 37 years and I love the place. It's home. I can't see myself living anywhere else bar here.
What's the draw that brings him from Sydney to want to go to Cork?
It's a question I still haven't asked Dad. Do you know, why Cork? Why not Fermanagh? Why not Dublin? Which was the capital, you know, well, Cork is the real capital, but Dublin is, on paper, Dublin's the capital. That's a joke, okay? But my only explanation that I could come up with is, I do remember growing up in Sydney, Dad's friends coming over for beers or, you know, barbecues or, you know, family gatherings. And a lot of them were Cork people. And he worked with a lot of Cork people. And I'd imagine that probably rubbed off on him. Cork seemed to be a fit for what he ideally wanted from a young family growing up in a place where there was Gaelic games, the Irish language, and everything cultural that Dad had imagined, having left Ireland for 20, 25 years, 30 years at that stage, and just wanted the kids to be immersed and in that type of environment. So I'd imagine that's how we ended up in Cork.
I suppose Dad did want us to be immersed in Irish culture, and he knew that it would help us with the transition to coming here.
When Dad used to talk about Ireland, We never believed that such a place existed.
To us, that was an imaginary place far, far away, you know.
We'd imagine, like, that was all concocted in Dad's head, like, in Ireland to us might as have been, you know, up in the galaxy there somewhere, like, you know.
When it came to that adaptation, how important was the club here and the school? Because sport becomes a fairly central part of you pretty much the minute that you land, doesn't it?
I thank God for a lot of things, but I thank God for the GAA, because it was the icebreaker for myself and the family, to help us settle into local community life here and new life in Cork. When we land here originally, like, this huge fanfare, you know, amongst the housing estate, like, that we might as have been the Martians coming from Mars. this is Ireland in the late 80s now. Because of my mum's genes, we all look like mum. I look around the state, there's no one looks like me. It's pretty much a white-collar society. So we stick out like a sore thumb. And that brings its own challenges too. And it can be intimidating coming to a place where you don't look like the rest of the people.
I would say it was quite difficult. Homogenous is a kind way of describing Irish society then, and perhaps even now. I would say it was very difficult for them. I'd say there was a huge amount of ignorance, and I think he's spoken himself. People didn't know if he was from Fiji or the Philippines. There was a mystery because I suppose Irish society was universally white. The kind of resistance to difference that we see even now, I would say, was more pronounced even then.
Were you ever made to feel like an outsider, or was that more something that maybe was in your own mind?
A bit of both. Initially, that was probably more in my own mind, the fact that I didn't know people and I looked different to the other kids, you know, in the neighbourhood. I'd say the people here, when I arrived, didn't know anything about, you know, mum's background, mum's culture. How could they, you know? Like, it's not every day Fijian walks down Fair Hill of Farnry, you know, kind of, it just doesn't happen. It hasn't happened since 1988 when we came. There's been no other Fijian come to the area, so how could they, you know? And then they're probably just trying to work us out as much as we're trying to work out own, you know, new surroundings here. But what the Pearshire Curling and Football Club did for us was it probably introduced us or put us on a platform where people got to know us better, and the more they got to know us better, the more they realised, like, sure, they're like us. They're exactly like us. What glues us all together is hurling them when I start playing with the man.
Because of his heritage, obviously, people noticed Sean O playing, and there was a crackle of rumour or suggestion on the place there was someone very different playing from the Pearshire.
With the sport, you know, for Sean Oge and the boys and even us settling into schools, you know, and I suppose that's the thing about Gael Clochty as well, or Gael Scunlana, you know, you are immersed into the Irish culture straight away, you know, and it's something that we all took to.
He became a hero for us, like, very soon. We were similar in age, but, like, at that stage of our career when we were just kids and he was making, say, Cork minor teams and stuff like that, that's kind of when we started to realise that he was exceptional and he was different for us.
I get a school education, which is second to none, but I get an education in hurling, which brings me up another level that I probably wouldn't necessarily get at club level. And for the first time, I meet, to me at the time, cranky, tough taskmaster in the name of Donal O'Grady. Little did I know he would have a huge influence on my school career, but on my hurling career, because he coaches me later on at Cork senior level. He's a man not to be messed about. I just see him as my coach and Irish teacher in school. I treat Irish the same way that I would have treated hurling. Practice, practice, practice. I learned fairly quickly that his training is meticulous, is very organised, and the magic in his training is repetitions. Like, you do a hook and drill, like, you don't repeat it by tens, you just repeat it by hundreds. Like, if you'd asked me after my 5 years in the mom, what did I learn hurling-wise, I learned how to hook, block, flick. And I learned how to hook, block, flick. Hook, block, flick. Hook, block, flick. Hook, block, flick. That was the mantra. It was just doing the basics exceptionally well, but just repeat, 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 repeat. Until it just became so ingrained in second nature, and then the proof was in the games, then
He's always been to me the ideal example of someone who takes up hurling pretty late, you know, commits to learning the skills and makes a huge success out of it.
My father was always involved in hurling. He would have played with our club, he would have coached in our club, so we were up there since 5 years of age. But that's generally when kids start, like there's 5, 6, 7 years of age. But for somebody to be like parachuted in at a later age and not knowing anything about hurling and to achieve what he's achieved is certainly remarkable.
That just sums up, you know, Sean Oak in a nutshell. You know, if he puts his mind to something or if he has 100% belief in something, he will just immerse himself into it and there'll be no stopping him. He would have been up against a lot of kids that would have been born with hurlies in their hands.
Geez, I'd like to think if I had grown up here as a 5 or 6 year old, do you know what I mean, and then picked up hurling at that stage and not 11 years of age or 12 years of age, you know, what could have been, do you know what I mean? But like, for me, you just have to make the best of, you know, the situation you fall into. So at that stage, you're seen as a late learner, like, you know, at 11 years of age, you look around, there's not many 11-year-old kids who pick up the game and then go on to represent the mind Cork, but like, they don't represent the club at senior level here.
A reminder, you can watch the full Sean O'Gahalpin Inner Drive on the Off the Ball YouTube page. It's well worth the watch. That's all we have time for here on the Big Red Bench of Cork's Good Times, Red FM. Dan Casey signing off. Marty Kilfoyle is on the way next.
The Big Red Bench with Aer Lingus,